Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Politically Social Podcast brought to you by the Current Affairs Times. I'm your host, Afia. Today we have with us Ms. Yasho Wang. Yasho is a senior researcher on China at Human Rights Watch, working on issues like internet censorship, freedom of expression, protection of civil society, and human rights defenders, along with women's rights. She's provided commentary to the BBC, CNN, and the New York Times, among many others. Prior to joining Human Rights Watch, Ms. Wang worked for the Committee to Protect Journalists. Ms. Wang has an MA degree in international affairs from George Washington University, and her articles have appeared in Foreign Policy, The Atlantic, The Washington Post, among many others. Welcome to this show, Ms. Wang.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us today. So recently, a video came out in Feng County in China where a woman was found chained to a wall in a doorless shed. And this, of course, sparked a public outcry internationally. It was said that she was tied up because of her violent fits and has 8 children with a man named Dong to whom she was sold. Now, it's really shocking that chaining someone in such a manner, that still happens in this day and age. Now, do you think slavery in any way or form still exists in rural or tribal areas, especially, in a place like China, where, we're still looking at democracy?
Well, I think, a person being chained happens everywhere. You know, I would say probably does exist in America, too. It just we don't know, right? You know, there are always crazy things going on around the world. I think this case, what's shocking is that, you know, as you mentioned, she was chained in a doorless shed. So it's like everybody can see her, like anybody who lives in the village, if you pass by that road, you will see her. So the shocking part is that, you know, she's in this condition and then people know it, but people feel it's okay. And people don't feel the need to interfere. And, you know, when we hear about China, we hear about high technology, high speed railway, all this kind of stuff. You know, it's about economic development. It's about, things are going well in the country. But then you find those situations, right? So I think that's really shocking that this happened in China and, people feel it's okay. Nobody was interfering.
Right. And so looks like there are hundreds of such similar stories in Asian villages and villagers are themselves children of trafficked women. How do we expect or rather ensure that these children get educated enough to put their own fathers in prison?
Well, it's hard because, as I said, the villagers knew the woman was being chained in this situation. She was sold to the man who, this surnamed Dong. So there's a total lack of awareness, this is wrong. Children born into those situations, how do they know that it's not okay, right? How do they know the father, my own father is a criminal.
Right.
My own father chained my mother, right? So I think, right. It really requires the interference of the higher government. This is wrong and the bad people, the husband, so-called husband should be prosecuted for such kind of crimes, and there needs to be education. This is wrong, and people, if you see this thing, you needed to report to the police, and this needs to be investigated, and the bad people has to be brought in to justice.
Right. Let's talk a little bit about media censorship. Now, in some of the Chinese villages, non-residents are not even allowed to enter, and then you have, plainly clothed security guards, and of course, mainstream media does not report these incidents because there's censorship. So how dangerous is media censorship?
Well, I'm sure the case like this happens in various parts of China. But, there's no, this case caused so much attention on the Chinese internet. It's like, people saw it, wow, they were shocked. How could this still happen? But, the reason that people feel, wow, this is shocked, at the same time, a lot of these kind of incidents are happening is because there was media censorship in China. Journalists cannot just go around to villages and interview people and try to, get to know the extensiveness of the situation. It's because the media is controlled by the government and the government doesn't want people to know the bad things going on in the country. So, you know, for women who are in that kind of situation, like, who do you turn to? Like, the villagers don't care. You know, there's no media attention because it's censorship. So, like, it really harms, you know, women and children or whoever in those kind of situation. There's nobody to turn to.
And what kind of pressure do you think international organizations can put on the government of China to put a stop to this?
I think, first of all, I would say, you know, what the international community can do is limited. The Chinese government doesn't really, you know, feel they have to, you know, listen to the international criticism, international pressure, and they always turn to this, the, you know, criticism towards China's human rights issues as they, you know, interference domestic issues, trying to, you know, undermine China's goals. So that's one side. On the other hand, you know, the government knows this is bad. It's bad publicity for the government, this kind of thing still going on in the country. So in a way, you know, it wants to show that, you know, I'm trying to do something about it because I look bad. So international attention, criticism itself, yes, useful, because the Chinese government does want to show, you know, where a government that, you know, are good at governing the country, even, you know, we're not democracy, we try to be the alternative version of democracy that can govern. So I think, you know, international attention itself is good.
Right. Let's talk a little bit about why trafficking still persists. Now, China's gender ratio, as we all know, is very imbalanced, with 34.9 million more men than women because of the initial one-child policy. Now, the international media says that this discrepancy is really because single men, the reason behind why single men still purchase trafficked women from remote areas. What's your take on this, and what do you think is the solution?
There are two reasons why, you know, this trafficking situation is so bad. Yes, one is the one-child policy. I mean, the one-child policy doesn't, you know, automatically render gender imbalance. It was because it's coupled with China's traditional preference for sons. So when you can only have one child, you wanted to make sure the child is a son. That's why you aborted, you know, female fetus. And that is the reason why China has a huge imbalance between men and women. And it's usually, you know, the men who are at the bottom of society who couldn't find a wife. And especially among those population, finding a wife and having children is extremely important. And that's, you know, the reason why there's internal trafficking and then also cross-border trafficking.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, we all know that gender inequality and slavery still exists, but really treating anyone as a tool for a patrilineal inheritance, that's more than inhuman. Now, what do you think international organizations like the UN are really doing about this whole thing?
I think, you know, the UN can play a role of, let's talk about cross-border trafficking. The UN can really play a role in funding, you know, a lot of civil society organizations in countries that help those women. It's very hard to do work in China. Like, you know, there's no civil society organizations who can do this kind of work because the Chinese government controls so much. But there are, you know, spaces for the UN to fund, you know, organizations in Bangladesh, in, you know, Myanmar. Myanmar is hard now because of the junta. But there are spaces for the UN to invest in helping those people directly. Also, the UN can play a facilitating role for countries to work together. You know, the Vietnamese government can work with the Chinese government together to crack down, you know, cross-border trafficking. You know, third, the UN can do research around the world. You know, they have staff around the country, around the world, and those, you know, researchers in those countries can share data together and to find solutions together.
Right, and the Chinese government has really claimed that it has strictly prohibited trafficking and slavery, but, you know, this issue remains endemic, and obviously there's no data on how they've done that. Well, why do you think so?
Well, I think first of all, China is not a democracy. You know, it's hard. The government cares, you know, not about people, but about, you know, that it can stay in power, and caring about women who are at the bottom of society, who are completely helpless, you know, is not its priority. Like, it doesn't have to care about those people. Secondly, you know, as you mentioned, China has a huge gender imbalance issue. For the government, in a very ironic way, you know, have those men at the bottom of society to have someone to be married to them. And, you know, it's good for its stability. The Chinese government cares about social stability. It doesn't want people to protest. It doesn't want people to, you know, go to the street or to criticize. So, you know, having those women being married to those men, in a way, you know, helps the Chinese government to make sure those men stay, you know, content. So it has no incentives to address the issue at all.
And do you think abolishing all these arbitrary detention and forced labor centers, you know, in all the internment camps, those will really help? That will really help?
Well, I think the internment camps is a, you know, it's in the context of Xinjiang. So I think those are two separate questions, very different issues. Xinjiang is so controlled that, you know, it's hard to, you know, like nobody can actually, you know, traffic without the government sanctions because the situation is very controlled. So, I think those are two very different issues.
Right. And in terms of legislation, what kind of policies does China have against harassment, threats, illegal discrimination, and forced labor?
Well, I would just speak on like trafficking, you know, especially bride trafficking. China does have laws to punish traffickers. The law exists. However, it's not well enforced, as I said, because the government doesn't have that much incentives to enforce the laws, and, you know, it doesn't have to care about the women who are in those situations. Besides the enforcement problem, there's also the government punishes, the law punishes, you know, people who sell women, but it doesn't really punish people who buy women. So the laws needs to be amended so people who, anybody who's involved in the selling and buying of humans should be punished severely, as a, you know, to disincentivize, you know, poor men to be part of the scheme to buy a wife.
So the government delayed or altogether ceased the identification and repatriation of foreign trafficking victims. How do we deal with this?
I don't know. I don't think that's the situation in China, because the situation usually that when, you know, usually the women who were trafficked into China, and they wanted to, you know, escape, they go to the police, and the police wants to get rid of them as soon as possible. So they usually just want the women to return to the country they from. So they do want to repatriate those people.
The overly narrow definitions inherent to China's anti-trafficking statutes, they're very confusing. And honestly, they limit the scope of victim identification within the demographics. And authorities really do not screen men or boys over the age of 14 for signs of exploitation or forced labor. How do you address this issue, specifically when you're talking about identifying the victims?
I mean, this chain of women case, you know, like in Feng County in Jiangsu province, people like who she is, right? Where she come from? And then the government said, you know, she originally came from the Yunnan province. She was sold twice. But I think if people were like, you know, people didn't really believe that. And people was being very cynical, because China actually are very good at, you know, documenting people where they're from. You know, you have to have show your ID for anything. If you want a mobile phone, you have to, you know, use a real name, you know, let's say your mobile phone number is attached to your identity, your ID number. And if you want to register websites, you know, go on social media, you'll have all to show your real identification. So in a way, people were cynical, because You know, everybody's tracked in China. Why can't you find this woman? Like, you know, if you're so good at using surveillance to, you know, catch the criminals, why can't you, you know, find out where this woman's from? Who are those people involved in trafficking her? So in a way, I mean, China is a different, you know, a different way because everybody's being kept a tap on. So it should be easy to find out what's going on. So it really says the government has no incentive, say, to crack down on trafficking.
Where do you think the government and other international agencies are failing?
Well, the government, as I said, it's not enforcing the laws. They are trafficking laws, right? And the Chinese government has a lot of technological capabilities, track and monitoring people. If they really want to find out the trafficking situation, if they really want to protect the women, they can. It's just they're not doing anything. And this is the biggest problem. I think, you know, for international organizations like the UN, as I said, you know, it can facilitate government cooperations between countries. Let's say Vietnam and China, like how the governments can work together to prevent and crack down on cross-border trafficking. Also, the UN, you know, needs to pressure those governments involved. Like, the situation is bad. You know, so many people are harmed, and you know, there needs to be, you know, talk, communication between the UN and those governments saying, you know, this looks bad and you should do something about it.
And what is your take on combating cross-border trafficking?
I think those governments should work together. It, you know, trafficking is a grave human rights abuses. They need to take it seriously to protect the most vulnerable people.
Right. That's very true. What, in your opinion, are the key challenges that many countries like China face while addressing this issue in their national legislation?
I think China has the laws. China, the government, has a lot of capabilities to enforce the laws. It's more about the government needs to do something because you need to protect the vulnerable people. It's the lack of will. It's not the lack of capacity. That's the biggest issue with China.
Very true. Now, all these countries are UN members. China is a member of the UN too. And UN does have a protocol to prevent, suppress and punish trafficking. Now, what type of actions do you think should the UN really take, and it's not doing it?
I mean, China, you know, has a lot of influence in the UN. China wants to play a bigger role at the UN. So, you know, China wants to look good inside the UN. So, you know, the UN has the system in place to address the issues. And really, the UN needs to pressure China to do more on that issue. I think the UN needs to send the message that this is a great problem. Like, if you know, China wants to play, to be, you know, a rising power on the international stage, it wants to look good, then do something about, you know, the most vulnerable people. I think that's the role the UN can play. And also, as I said earlier, the UN, you know, can facilitate communications between countries.
Right. They definitely can. Well, thank you, Yatro, for joining us today. This was a very interesting discussion and a very, very important topic internationally. Thank you again for joining us.
Thank you for having me.